Shalom Aleichem, Kal Kadosh, Beit Levi, Synagogue. Thank you so much for joining us. Ami, good to see you. Okay, beautiful Golden Gate background. Okay, Ray, Isaac, Elal, thank you for joining. We're going to deal with, when I share my screen, I'll show you the slides. The basic topic, and you'll follow along, is about when is it okay, when is it proper to miss Minyan? And what is it that we should try to make the Minyan? We should make, now, if you want Ashkenazi, I have a lot of Ashkenazi background, but if you want the Sephardi, we're going to do some halachas of both. The idea of what's the value, where did it come from of minyan? How strong, how critically important is it? What is it good for in spirituality? What's the value? What's the value of a minyan? And I really want to get to also davening times. What's the most ideal time to pray, and what's the earliest time, the latest time when it comes to Shacharit, Mincha, and Arvit? Those are the questions I'm going to try to deal with, the halachic questions. The machshava question I'm going to deal with, I'll start with one, is there's a Gemara, a famous like concept that says in Brachot, Mem Zayin, and Mem Bet, it says a person who comes and there's nine people in a synagogue, and they're number 10, they made the minyan. They finished it off, so they made the minyan. They get the zechut of everybody else who comes. Amazing. Question is, what's so magical about being the magic number 10? That person gets the merit, the reward for everybody else in the group, and everybody else who comes after as well. Why should he deserve it any more than others? Now, it could be people say also, if you're number 1, 2, and 3, and so forth, you also get merit. If you're number 1, you get merit of everybody who came after you as well. Fine, but why is number 11 any less than number 10? What's special about that? So, to answer that question, I saw the Ma'abit. The Ma'abit, Rav Yosef Detrani, one of the very late Rishonim, early Achronim, 1500s, came to Sfat in the 50s. Mid-1500s, early 1500s, and he lived in Yerushalayim, was contemporary with Yosef Karo, and and there was some dispute about the renewal of the smicha, of the institution of the rabbinic positions, Eretz Yisrael. Yosef Karo was the author of the Shulchan Aruch, he was holding with one position, one group of rabbis. The Ma'abit who lived in Eretz Yisrael had a different group of rabbis. There's actually some tshuvot, some letters that the Ma'abit has about about what happens if you have some people that follow a leniency, a kula, by Shemitah, that they follow Heter Mechir or something like that. They could sell the land and people can eat the fruit. Now, next year is going to be, in only a couple months, in Eretz Israel. Israel this year is going to have a special merit of having Shemitah, a certain level of Kedusha. So there's ways around to make sure that everybody's able to get food that has Kedusha and not have the farmer starve. Fine. So the Ma'abit has one position, or Yitzhakar had a different position. So he deals with over there. What do you do with a person that goes to a store and the storekeeper is lenient and you're machmir? Are you allowed to buy food in that store? The opposite is the storekeeper allowed to sell to people if he holds it's asur, but the other people are buying it. Anyway, the Ma'abit has a book of Hashkafa, Beit Elohim. And so thank you everybody who's coming and joining. We're discussing the idea of Minyan. What's so special about number 10? What makes number 10 magical? Says the Ma'abit, because when Hashem has ways of connecting to the world. In Kabbalah, they're called Sfirot, channels, and in other ways of thinking about it, there are Midot of Hashem. And he says there's 10 channels, 10 avenues, 10 Sfirot of Hashem paths to this world. Now, there are other systems where there'll be more than 10. There's the Yugamot, Midot, Rachamim, but there's 10 when it comes to the Sfirot. 10 basic Midot. We have like the In some ways of thinking about it, there's three that are associated with Hashem. Chacham Bina Da'at, we daven, we mention, it's also associated with Chabad, those three. And then there's seven Ushpizin. Seven, so anyway, those make up the 10 spheres, 10 channels of connection to Hashem in some way. And he says, when you have a minyan, 10 people, they're representative of the fact that just like Hashem could connect to the world through 10 ways, we're 10 people. And we're going to connect to you, Hashem, and everybody's bringing something else to the minyan. Without 10, we're 9 people. We're incomplete. We need number 10 to make up a whole Jewish people. That's a small microcosm of the Jewish people. 10 people already shows that we're whole, we're a unit. We're going to come and represent Hashem. We're going to represent, so to speak, Hashem's divine presence that comes into this world and represent Jewish people as a whole, which the Maharal says number 10 in all the Jewish systems. We always use like a base 10 number system because it's the most complete number with within what we usually discuss. Yud is the smallest letter. Yud, and that's what's representative of 10. That's what the 10 is particularly special. And he says there's a lot of ramazim for this. One of them is that it says an interesting idea that Hashem came down to this world when Hashem gave us the Matan Torah. Hashem came so particularly close up to 10 tefachim, not beneath 10 cubits of a fist breadth, whatever it is, a small amount to this world. Hashem came so close to this world. And so when Moshe Rabbeinu went to Shemayim, he only had to elevate himself up 10 hand breadths. What's that all about, 10? So he said because of the same spherot, the same 10 channels, the way Hashem enters this world is the same way that he appears to us in that way, and the way we connect back to him. So with 10 people as a microcosm of an entire unit, of a little bit of the whole Torah, a Torah that's missing one letter is unfit. Same thing with the Jewish people. We need everybody in Klal Yisrael to contribute. The Maharal says Hashem, when he gave the Torah, spoke in one incredibly unified, powerful, spiritual, psychic voice, but yet it broke apart in like a white light through a prism into a lot of different ways. And we can't recreate the Torah, we can't re-understand the Torah without a little bit of everybody together. That's why the Torah, in the Medrash says there's 600,000 letters of the Torah. There's less than that. There's really like about 300,000, 300,000 and 500 or something like that. So the Pnei Yeshua says you have to add the white spaces. White spaces count too. The people that are doing the mitzvah, the people that are refraining from Aveirot, everybody works together. We have the 600,000 letters of the Torah together, or the Tagim count, the Haflaz Pshat, either way. Everybody together makes up an idea of the Sefer Torah. So let's see if I can share my screen. Either way, that's one idea behind 10. Is it's a microcosm of the Jewish people, microcosm of Hashem's Sefirot. Okay? If something, anybody has any questions, please ask. Sometimes I'll get clear, and sometimes with the Kabbalah, I'll just try to say what the parts I understand. Okay? The parts I don't understand, I'll leave up to Dr. Levy, everybody that's a chacham that knows exactly how to put these together. So the first thing is a 10 people special thing. Okay. Now I have a story in the Gemara. This is still before we get to the halacha, but there's already a question now drawing towards the halacha. I'm going to need some help from the Levy boys and everybody else to help me figure out this Gemara. The question is, how important is it to go to Minyan? Is it a chiyuv or is it a mir chasidu? It's a pious act. It's a proper thing. And it's a particularly good topic, I think, in these days when we have, unfortunately, corona, that we need a refuah shlema to the entire world. But to mechazik in this area of trying to join together in which ways that we can. Maybe it's on Zoom, maybe it's in Levy's house, maybe it's in the synagogues, wherever it is that we're able safely to join, we try to mechazik. So the Gemara says as follows. So anyway, first let me ask, what do we think? Is it an obligation to go to Minyan? Is it a pious act? What happens when you have other conflicts? What about if I'm going to miss a business meeting? Or what happens if I'm going to take away from, if I'm going to learn at a shiur or something? Should I go to Minyan and skip the shiur? Or should I go to the shiur and skip the... So what do we think, everybody? I'll stop the share the sharing so that I can hear everybody.
Hami, what do you guys think? I don't really have any background on this, but I assume since most people do it, it's a chiyuv, not just a pious act.
Okay, that's a great answer. I love it. Okay, we have Hami's opinion. We're gonna hold on to for that. There might be an obligation to join a minyan. You see, look, it's such a special, important thing that we run after. We don't take very lightly. There are many stories from the Gemara, but all the way to today, how careful people are in not missing minyan. Definitely, that's a great idea.
I think it's not a chiyuv. My vote is not a chiyuv. I think it's a nice thing. Is there 10 people? It obligates us to do kiddushah, kaddish, and all that, but it's not the level of chiyuv. Of kashrut, of Shabbat, of, you know, things like that, or even other derabbanans, you know.
Excellent. Okay, so there's two now. We have two opposing opinions. Let's see what we find in the sources. So the Gemara has a story. You can't sort of go wrong in these questions. Multiple choice. It's a yes, no, machloket. You can always bet sure on some machloket. So I got here a Gemara that says, once Rabbi Eliezer, one of the Tanaim, who usually was involved with a lot of miracles, a special person, Rabbi Eliezer, in Hyrcanus, he was the one that turned the river backwards, uprooted the carob tree 100 amot, the walls of the Beit Midrash fall. Anyway, Rabbi Eliezer was once in a place with 9 people in the synagogue, not 10, no minyan. What are they going to do? They're stuck. They had a person who was an Eved Kenani, a slave. They had someone as a servant over in the shul. So they called him over, and they said, and this was way before Lincoln freed the slave, so slavery existed in Israel in those days, people that were wealthy. So Rabbi Eliezer had a slave, so he had an Eved Kenani. So he said to the Eved Kenani, do you want to join the minyan? He said, sure. So he said, okay. He gave him freedom. He told him, you're now free, and now you're Jewish. And now you're going to convert, and you're going to join the minyan right now. Okay, now you have a minyan. He made Rabbi Chanina ben Akasha, Omer, and he got through, he started with the Kaddish. The Gemara has a big question on this. Why did Rabbi Eliezer free a slave? Okay, could be he lost some money, whatever it is. But you have to. The Gemara has a particularly halachic question, a very nuanced question. Now, it gets into halachic details. It's okay if you don't get all the details. But I want to bring out a point out of this Gemara. Why did he free a slave to make a minyan? Okay, it's too bad we can't make a golem anytime we're sort of stuck. Pull over some little kid and make him gadol for a minyan. There actually is an Ashkenazic practice. Here's one halacha. I'm going to try to get halacha tonight. That's the levies asked me. And so one halacha. I'm going to get to many more, but this one is, could you use a kid who's not bar mitzvah to join the minyan? You have 9 people, and so he's 10 years old. What do we say? Any thoughts? Hami, yeah. No, okay. You're right. Except there is an opinion in the Ramah. The Moshe Israelites or Ashkenazim have, they quote the Rabbeinu Tam, who reads the Gemara that Sfardim read for Zimun, the Ashkenazim read for Minyan. They say for Zimun, you can't include a kid. For Minyan, for number 10, you can include a kid. That is Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. Now, we don't absolutely, Sfardim don't hold to that opinion. That's it. They have to have 10 adults. For Ashkenazim, there is an opinion. The Ramah says, "B'shad chak, you're totally stuck." That it's that works. What about his Moroccan? That might also work. Yeah, we have. So the Ashkenazi opinion, even Ashkenazim, there's a different opinion you should follow today. Rav Soloveitchik, for example, he used to do like that, follow the Ramah, and the Mishnah Berurah advises for Ashkenazim not to follow that opinion. Okay, either way. By Sfardim, they don't have the pit. Now, the Gemara says that Rabbi Eliezer freed a slave. The Gemara asks a particular question and says, wait a second, there's actually a sur to free a slave. We'll talk about it soon, a little bit why. But the Gemara says, Hechi Avid Hachi, how is he allowed to do that? Amar Rav Yehuda, Kol Meshachar Avdo, Over Ba'asei. If there's someone who's an Eved Kenani, in theory, they're really supposed to stay in Eved Kenani. You're not supposed to free them, give them freedom. Lolam Behem Tavodu, Hashem destined that tribe of Canaan, the descendants from Noah's children, to be slaves, and you shouldn't free them. So why is Rabbi Eliezer going to free them? How is that allowed? Well, you know what? We have a good excuse over here. Ledvar mitzvah shiny. He did it for a mitzvah. It was a religious purpose. That's why he freed him. Gemara says, wait a second. Could you just do avirot to do mitzvot? The path to, I don't even remember the phrase, the path to Gehenna is paved with good intentions. So look, he tried doing the right thing, Robin Hood, whatever. Stealing and going out of your, taking things from other people just to benefit yourself. Is that right? A mitzvah of avir. The Gemara says there's no way that we could justify such a thing. The Gemara says actually, in this case, we could. Mitzvah de Rabim Shining. This is at least a public need. When it comes to public needs, it's a little bit different. So the Rishonim have a particular question. What exactly does that mean? If there's a lot of people that need, let's say, Kriyat HaTorah on Shabbat, are you allowed to carry on Shabbat outside the Eruv, a mitzvah? For the Rabim, we should allow all Avirot? What exactly does this mean? Okay. Any thoughts about how to explain this Gemara? What exactly does the Gemara mean to answer? Any thoughts? If not, no pressure. I'll ask more questions after. Okay. This is not as, there's four explanations in the Rishonim.
If it was older than 13 years old, right?
Nevi was definitely older than 13. I mentioned that as a side point. Could you use a kid? Sorry. Using the kid is not in this Gemara. Using the kid is, I have to ask Dubin which daf, but it's, I don't know. I think on daf Nun Ted or something, sorry, Mem Ted. It's another two daf later. It's not on this page. This story is really about using an Eved. You can't use an Eved, but you can use a freed person. I brought up the kid as a side point. So the Gemara has four explanations behind what's going on with this story. So one explanation is that you're allowed to do just like a aseh do chalot today. Positive is better than negative. Sometimes if a person is so overpowered and exuberant about doing a mitzvah, that actually in fact allows sometimes doing an avera. When do we ever find such a thing? Well, we rarely find that in practice, but there is such a thing in the Gemara. For example, if a person has shatnez, a linen and wool mixtures together in their tzitzit, they're allowed to wear tzitzit. Because, now, we don't do that today because we don't have tchila, even though we think we have tchila, we don't know we have tchila. Fine. But either way, that's one example. Or if someone has leprosy, I can't believe such an unfortunate thing, a baby who has to do a milah on the eighth day has sarat. So could they cut off the leprosy on the when they're going to do Brit Mila? Okay, those are examples. Now, or maybe, I don't know if this is a good example, another example that Yerushalmi has, what about if someone's going to eat matzah on the first night, only 2 months from now? Oh, we were just coming to Tu B'Shvat already last night. So we're already in the process of the recreation of the world, the B'machshava, in the Arizal world, that 40 days before... Okay, before Chaf Hei Nisan, before Chaf Hei Adar, the creation of the world. So matzah is supposed to be from Yashan, from old grain. What if it's made from new grain, Chadash? It's not supposed to be eaten. So the Yashan says, what about mitzvah asay, dochalot asay, a positive thing could overcome a negative thing. So anyway, those are a few examples, not so common, but basically the Ramban says, you want to understand why is positive, a mitzvah allow you to violate an avera? He says, I'll explain, because as I've been sort of trying to imply, mitzvahs I say, positive things, come from Avod Hashem, the love of Hashem. Love of Hashem is a lot more powerful and important and takes precedence over fear of Hashem. Refrain and recoiling from things that we're not supposed to do. So I have a choice between a positive and a negative. Sometimes, when it's deemed appropriate, Chazal say, the positive overweighs the negative. We do the positive, and even if it means doing an Avera. So, to some degree, some Rishon say, okay, that's what's going on in this Gemara. He wants to make a minion. It's so important. Oh, he had to free a slave? Okay, but you know what? Positive overrides negative. Okay? Sometimes, a tiny lesson out of that, the machshava, is that, we should run towards mitzvot and not sometimes let things get in our way that is annoying or is difficult, or we have other things that are stopping us because the other implications they can have. Sometimes we just have to let our emotion and our passion thrive and just jump into it. Like in this parsha in Yamsuf, we just have to go for it, not to break and stop. Either way, that's one explanation. The other explanations get a little more involved, but maybe one aseh could be docha, different aseh if it's a very, very powerful aseh. A third explanation has to do with what's wrong with freeing a slave, says the Ramban, the Ran, the Ritva, the Rashba. He says, there's nothing wrong with freeing a slave intrinsically. They don't have to be slaves. They weren't cursed to be slaves forever. He says, I'll tell you, there's a different isur, lo techanim, to giving free gifts. Shouldn't give free gifts to non-Jewish people, because in the Jewish clan, we should give tzedakah, it should be nice, camaraderie. With outside of that, now, the practical implications of this, there's many, although we're not going to get to tonight. You have to be careful when we're giving gifts to other people. So when are we allowed to? If it's reciprocal, if you have a relationship with them, that's mutar. So, for example, I have a neighbor, I have a super, I have people that I like. Okay, so those, if they're non-Jewish, great, I can give them gifts. So it says the Ran, same thing as freeing a slave. You're not supposed to free a slave for no reason. You don't give gifts to the non-Jewish people. It's just helping avodah zarah. It's furthering the cause of idol worship. Okay, but what about if they're going to then become Jewish? He says, then you should be able, and then Jewish, and then help me. He says, that's okay. That's the explanation in the Gemara. A last one is, if you're helping out a lot of people, chatev sheshatitzke, it's allowed sometimes to sin. Now, I'm only bringing this up in theory, not in practice. We'll have to give a shiur on this a different night. Sometimes you're allowed to sin in order to help out the public. Chacham Avadya Yosef, I see in the background of the Levi synagogue, a beautiful picture. We have here too a little bit picture, whatever. Chaim Yosef, he asked, what about, can you have a restaurant open on a fast day? You're a grocery store, you're a restaurant, and people are coming in. But the question is, if, let's say, imagine in Tel Aviv, some people are going to be not fasting on the day, and the question is, if you close your store that has a hechsher, people are going to go to next door that doesn't have, that's not kosher food. Should you keep your store open? They're going to eat on a fast day. What do we say?
Keep it open.
Wow. So you allow a small avira to avoid a bigger avira. Some of it comes out of that conclusion, but that's part of this theme. Chatev shel shetizke rabim. Sometimes yes, sometimes no, but yes, that is a general. Rav Avadya is one of those that hold of it more often than others, but you have to judge each case. Can't get to it all now. Okay, so now here's some more halachot about the question I really want to get to, a halacha, is it obligation or not? So Rav Moshe Feinstein's opinion is absolute obligation, like Hami said. He's coming on very strong shoulders. Rav Moshe Feinstein, I know it's a little bit backwards, the formatting, I should have fixed it. Either way, he says, davening in a minyan is absolute chiyuv. How does he know it's absolute chiyuv? First of all, his proof is that you're supposed to travel for a minyan. Without, assuming not corona, a person has an obligation to travel up to 1 mil. And this is absolutely halakha, brought in Shachan Aruch, Misham Ra, Yaki Yosef, up to 18 minutes. If there's no minyan in his house, just travel a little bit of time. So the postkin would say, even that means driving. You could walk or drive, but even it means driving. So that means if you don't live right next to the shul, you still have an obligation to try to go as far as you could if it's up to 18 minutes. If it's beyond 18 minutes, you're not absolutely obligated to go to minyan. Okay, if it's on your way, you're traveling on the way, there's a question of how far you have to travel in that same direction, so you should travel up to 72 minutes. Okay, but under normal circumstances, you're living in a place, you have to travel up to 18 minutes. They bring a question. What do we say about the following? That's Rav Moshe's opinion, and he says, why is an obligation to pray in a minyan? He says, a chiyuv from the Torah, because the obligation to pray to Hashem is la'avdo b'chol Hashem, to serve Him with the worship of our heart. And he says, the worship of our heart is only important when it's to be accepted in front of Hashem. Hashem should listen to us. He says, there's a Gemara that says, if someone prays where there's feces, where it's unclean, it's not a mitzvah. It's a toiva. Hashem doesn't want to see a person in a bathroom. That's not the place to pray. The open feces, open things that are not, they're totally impure, don't pray near them. So Rav Moshe says, what's so bad? So he'll try his best. He'll pray where he can. And if Hashem doesn't listen, Hashem doesn't listen. For example, they had Rav Zusha, one of the Hasidic Rebbeim, Ashkenazi. I love, he came to Hanipoli, Ukraine. He was once in jail because he was trying to support Judaism. And they threw him in jail, and they had it was in the middle of 1700s, so no fancy plumbing. They had a toilet seat in the middle of the prison, and he couldn't pray. He woke up in the morning, and he was so sad, distraught, he can't even say prayers to Hashem. Can't put on tefillin, he had nothing. And then he started to dance, and some people saw him and said, what's going on, Rav Zusha? You lost your mind. So he said, no, I usually every day get a big mitzvah to pray to Hashem. Today I get a mitzvah to refrain not to pray. That's my mitzvah. Most people in their life don't get such a mitzvah to have a mitzvah not to pray. So anyway, so that says Rav Moshe, that's the idea. Hashem wants to hear tefillot where they could be heard, and a minyan ensures that we're going to be heard. We'll get more back to that soon. Okay, that's Rav Moshe's opinion about being heard. Now, I had a question on the side, a tangent, but it's a halacha question. Very touchy. I hope I get invited back. What do we say about going on vacation, now, with corona, without corona, going on vacation where there's no minyan? Are you supposed to go to a place if there's not going to be minyan? Let's say, for example, someone wants to travel, Jamaica, you go to Hawaii, you go to a place, Kedar Chabad, you go to a place where it's far out, India, you find a place and there's hardly any Chabad, any minyan nearby. So you're beyond 18 minutes. Are you allowed to do that, to make yourself not near a minyan? What do we think? Thoughts? It's not controversial that I want to hear.
You're free to do that.
Okay. So you put yourself in the situation when you find yourself, when you wake up that morning, you check. You look on Google Maps, it says 3 hours to the nearest minyan. Okay, so you're patur. That's Dr. Levy. Okay, Chashuv, Chacham Levy. Okay, any other? So I'll be the brave one to argue on this. Okay, this is a big discussion. Make it bottom line. Rishlomo Zalman Orabach, one of the Gedolim, the Ashkenazi Gedolim in the last generation, he said you're not supposed to do that. He said, for example, when you're talking about Chilul Shabbat, a person's not supposed to do an elective surgery. Now this is based on the Gemara about taking a boat, a cruise, 3 days before Shabbat. You're not supposed to be yourself in a dangerous situation before Shabbat because it might come out. You have to mechallel Shabbat, even though if you have to mechallel Shabbat to save yourself from sakana, you're allowed to, of course, but you try not to engineer that. Try to avoid that as much as possible. So Rishon Zalman, same thing with Minyan. So his son-in-law, in the back of the Sefer, in Halicha Shlomo, Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, I don't know if anybody heard of him, he passed away only a few months ago. Big, big Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. And unfortunately, in Corona, we lost him, but a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was a big posek, even for the modern Orthodoxy world. And he gave smicha to many people. He had smicha online for many, many people, thousands and thousands of people. Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, son-in-law of Shlomo Zalman. So he writes a comment in the back. He says he's not sure. He's not going to argue on his father-in-law or Shlomo Zalman Orbach. But he said it could be. You could disagree. Shabbat is so chamur. It's a karet. It's very serious. Shabbat ensures the identity of a Jewish people. Minyan is not quite the same. He comes and he argues that he doesn't think it's quite the same. Bottom line, I would say about the vacation thing, I would say the most opinions of Yaakov Kamenetsky and others, they say it depends. If you need to take the vacation, you should have that to have a person's mind settled, to take it easier, so this way he regains his strength, which is always important sometimes, especially in Corona. A person needs derech eretz tzarech chizuk. A person for his work, for his Torah, needs chizuk to strengthen himself, so they take a break. So yes, if a person feels they need to, and this will enable them to better serve Hashem, then it's mutar to take the vacation there. If they feel they can go very nicely to vacation you find a good place in Yerushalayim, I don't know, you find a good place you find a good place in Deal, New Jersey, you find a place where there's some Sephardi or Ashkenazi Minyanim, good, even better. But basically, that's the consensus on that topic. So, going back to the question about obligation versus not, any comments on this or questions? I know I'll go fast, so if any questions, please go straight ahead. Okay, so my next question is the obligations. I said Ramosha is fine to the opinions. Anybody disagree with Ramosha Feinstein? The answer is yes. We had before Chacham Levi mentioned, but we have here other opinions. Rashbash, Yaki Yosef brings some other opinions. He says, for example, the Rashbash, whatever, he's one of the sources on the topic that if a person swears he's not going to go to the shul, so it's valid. Usually a person takes a swear and says, I'm not going to keep Torah. We say, wait till he wakes up in the morning and forget that vow because it's invalid. You can't take a vow not to keep Torah. But going not to go to the synagogue is not quite as critical. Okay, that's one story, one proof. The Netziv, Rav Schachter, one of my teachers, Herschel Schachter, the posek of the OU, Orthodox Union, one of the Hakshirim. So he said, there's a proof in the Gemara. The Gemara says a person goes to Minyan every day and doesn't come one day, Hashem inquires about him and asks, that's Ashkenazi for, so what happened? Where'd he go? Why is the person not appearing in the Minyan? And says in the Gemara, if he didn't come to Minyan because of he went for a mitzvah to learn Torah, X, Y, and Z, as Hashem says, I give him a bracha, he'll be excused and he'll be successful. And if he was going because he wanted to make more parnasa, to make more money, and he really should have come to Minyan, Hashem says, I'm not going to give him bracha that day. So that's the Gemara in Brachot Avavah Mebed. And Rosh Hashanah, you see from that Gemara, it doesn't say he's absolutely obligated. Hashem doesn't say he didn't come to Minyan, and it's terrible. It says a person who usually goes to Minyan, the person who usually goes to Minyan has to keep coming because he has a minhag to go to Minyan. He should keep up his minhag. It's a beautiful minhag. He should keep it up. That's Rosh Hashanah's opinion. And there are different opinions across the board. Yalka Yosef for Ashkenaz, for Sfaradim, I would say, Yalka Yosef assumes it's a chiyuv. Shulchan Aruch's opinion is, where do I have it over here? I know I keep switching. Yishtadel. A person should try very hard. Lipalel v'kinesen tzibur. To pray in a synagogue with a congregation. If Imanus, he's not feeling well, he can, especially with Corona. Any yachol level of v'kinesen, so then he shouldn't pray in the minyan. It's okay, he doesn't need a minyan. Question is, how hard do you have to try? Basically, that's the question of these opinions. Ramosha Feinstein, Yalka Yosef, obligation. Rosh Hashanah, Netziv, not obligation. Here's one more interesting quote over here. The Arderet, who is Rav Kook's father-in-law, a tremendous gaon in the beginning of the 1900s, rabbi of Yerushalayim, he says that really it's not a particular such a strong obligation to pray in the synagogue, to pray in a minyan. For example, a person likes sitting in the sukkah by himself praying there. It's okay. It's a mitzvah in the sukkah, and that could override praying with a minyan. Now, we don't, the halakha, I think, by most people, is not to follow that opinion of Adarit. But I'm mentioning right now, there is definitely a range of opinions. My understanding is for Sardim, it is an obligation. For Ashkenazim, as we said already, machloket. Even if it's not a full obligation, what I would say is, even according to Shechter, the Netziv, the Adaret, it's a very, very special prized thing and enhances our tefillah a tremendous amount. For example, I have over here, before I get to crack down on halachot here, I have here that...
Can I myself say?
Yeah,
question.
Please. Go for it. Oh no, am I losing
the first of all, who is the Adaret in the Kabbalistic bent? Is that why he says the Sukkah?
He is. He did have,
right?
The Adaret does have.
Who?
What's his first name? I don't remember his name, per se. Maybe it's Rabinovich. He was involved in Kabbalah. Yes.
Okay, so it sounds like.
I have one other source. While we're on the theme of Kabbalah, the Sulam, talking about why do you need 10 people? So he talked about what we talked about before, the 10th Sfirot. And the last of the Sfirot is connected to David HaMelech, Malchut, and that incorporates all 10. And that's why the 10th person gets the Zechut of everybody else. Like, for example, David HaMelech, if in the end of days, the Gemara has, they're going to make a feast for all the Tzadikim, and he's going to want to be the one to make the Zimun, because he incorporates everybody else. The Maharal also talks about a very funny, sort of interesting Gemara. The Gemara talks about the height of certain Talmidei Chachamim. It says Rebbe was tall, was a giant, was very tall. Rebbe Chiya was a student, only was half his height. He would get up to his waist. And it says the student Rebbe Chiya, Rav, would be only up to the waist of Rebbe Chiya. And then each generation goes 10 generations. And it says, about the 10th generation, sorry, I said it wrong. The first, every time they went generation, he was up to the shoulder of the other person, but he was ahead. The Rebbe was a head taller than Rebbe Chiya. And generation after generation, he was a head taller. And it gets finally to the last generation and says, oh, he was up to the waist of the previous generation. So the Maharal says, obviously we're not talking about literally, because otherwise we'd be midgets, like, that doesn't make any sense. Now we're talking about actual physical height. What we're talking about is in spiritual height and in spiritual ability to bind all of Kali's all together. And the reason it says 10 people is because a minyan of chachamim make up an ability to incorporate a microcosm of Klal Yisrael. There's a beautiful midrash at Baruch Levine. They made a song out of it, which is 10 people learning together, lishma. I don't know if we have that on our Zoom at some point. 10 people learning together, lishma, could bring the Mashiach. What's the point of that? Because there's a Talmud Torah derabim, a power of 10 people, a microcosm of the Jewish people. And that's what the Maharal is saying, that when there's 10 people together, they have a certain power. And he says, everybody else was just up to the shoulder of the previous person, but the last person was up to half. He said because he's, like, so to speak, the clincher, the most important person. So his half, even though he's a tiny midget, but he's a midget standing on the shoulders of a giant. So yes, so to speak, spiritually is a tiny bit. They also have the mashal from the Chafetz Chaim. How does it make any sense that we should pray for Mashiach? The Rambam was praying for Mashiach. The Arizal prayed for Mashiach. The Mashiach think of, I, Ike Sultan, should pray for Mashiach. It's a joke. I don't have any kavanah. Why should I bother? Says the Chafetz Chaim. He says, no, it's like a jug that's filled up to the very brim. And every generation, they keep it. And we're waiting until it's totally full for Hashem to bring the Mashiach. And every generation fills it up a little bit more. A better mashal I heard from my wife. It was a tremendous, like, relay race, one thing after the other. I don't know, at the Olympic, you make a 20-step relay race between different competitors, biking and they don't, a triathlon they have, but I don't know, a 20-step relay race, I don't know if they had an Olympics yet. So the one guy's doing the golf, and one guy's doing football, and one guy's running, and one guy's, and everything's getting more difficult as it goes on. And the last step, and one guy's walking on spikes, and this guy's walking on a tight wire, and the last step of the relay race is that it's just, it's a very basic thing. He's just to walk 100 meters, and the guy who's supposed to be on the team for the 20th step is sitting on a lounge chair. And the rest of the team has been beating themselves silly. They're sweating and been dying over the fact they've been making sure to beat to the get to the championship, get to the finish line, and they're waiting for the last person to do their part. And they're screaming, "Well, get up, go!" And he doesn't even get off the lounge chair. And everybody doesn't understand. They were climbing up mountains. They were swimming overseas. And this guy can't even walk. So the same thing is true with our tefillot. Hashem doesn't ask us to be like the Arizal. Hashem doesn't expect us to be as great as that. Our tefillot are not going to have the kavanah from beginning to end as beautiful, as perfect as the Rashash or some of the Gedolim of the Ashkenazim. Hashem is asking us to do our part. And with that, we could tip it over a little bit. All right. Here goes the halachot. Run down to some halachot between about minyan, about davening times. So first one is obligation, not obligation. We talked about Rosh Hashanah, Yaakov Yosef. Is it better to pray by yourself if you're hungry, you want to eat? So basically, Yaakov Yosef and others, they say it's better to eat and better not to eat before you're davening. So therefore, if you have to pray by yourself, if you're very, very starved, pray by yourself and eat. Then go to Minyan and eat before you're praying at the Minyan. So if someone goes out very late, 9:30 at 10 o'clock Shabbat Minyan, and they feel like by the time they finish at 12 o'clock, so they're going to be starved and they can't make it. So better really than they should pray by themselves. The shul, praying in the synagogue is absolutely a very special thing, even if there is no Minyan. But if you can pray with the Minyan at home, in a house, rather than in a shul, it's better with a minyan. Skipping.
What about a shul versus a yeshiva or a bet midrash?
Excellent. It's a machloket, Rabbi Yochanan Reishim and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. We follow the opinion a bet midrash is more important than a shul because there are people that learn there. The shechinah, after korban habayit, in makom lakash baruch hu ba'olam hazeh, ela dalam lachal halacha. The place where people learn. People learn halacha especially. I know I took some of the shears for halacha to do other things, but we're also learning halacha. So yeah, a Beit Midrash takes precedence if you have an opportunity. There is the actual Rav Ami, Rav Asi, it says in the Gemara, Brachot, I think Dafsaid or something, they used to pray in the Beit Midrash even with no minyan, rather than pray with a minyan. Beit Midrash is so special. We do not follow their opinion because we're not Torah Tam or Munah Tam. We don't spend every waking moment learning. Okay, we don't follow their opinion.
What's the definition of a bet midrash, myself? Then, what if you learn 1 hour a week somewhere, 1 hour a day, 3 hours a day, most of the waking hours?
So I think it has more to do with designation than the amount of time. If somebody
What's the definition of a bet midrash?
I think the definition is they designate this place as this is now the bet midrash. They're not going to use it for other things. Now, it doesn't mean a person learns not special. They should make a place in their house. They should learn. But it's not practical for most people in their house to make a Beit Midrash or a Beit Knesset that they could designate. Meaning, a real designation means, like, I'm going to try to use this from now on for that purpose. That's what I think the definition is. But other than that, yes, of course there's Kiddushah, a place to learn. The Rabbeinu Yonah holds that even a person's house, not designation, a person make a Makom Kavu, where they have more Kavanah in their house. They have a special spot.
Does it have to be a... 10 people learning there, or 5 people learning there, or
3 people? No, the Mishnah Megillah talks about 10 people learning in a city makes it a makom of chashivut. But no, even if one person learns in a Beit Midrash, or anybody learns, that he is a Beit Midrash. It doesn't have to do with if one person learning for a Beit Midrash, even 5 minutes a week, it could be a Beit Midrash. The Kedusha of Beit Midrash doesn't derive its source from the amount that's learned as much from the holiness and honor that's given to it, that we ascribe towards we're saying that we're designating this. And the Ramban holds that the more you learn there, the more you use it, the better it is. The more Kedusha, so to speak, that's infused in it. But the other Rishonim assume that it's the banner of the designation.
Okay, and there's no time factor? For example, one person designates every Rosh Chodesh is going to learn for an extra hour, half hour, 5 minutes. In that place in his home. That's not a
bit.
Is that the Beit Midrash?
I would say what I meant by designation is in the like in my house I don't have any Beit Midrash. Fine, because I can't say any room, not the dining room, not the kitchen, not the bedroom, the kids' room is designated Beit Midrash. And Beit Midrash you're not supposed to eat in, not supposed to sleep in. It was a tree with a special respect, so I can't say I designate it. I could say I have a a shender, a place where I learn, I don't know if you can see, whatever. Anyway, so making everybody dizzy, I'm sorry. I have a place where I learn in my house, but it's not a Beit Midrash per se. A Beit Midrash, by 100% definition, is a place that I won't use for other things, only for learning. But if you do designate, then it doesn't matter how often it's used, it has the Kedusha of Beit Midrash. What we're talking about, Rabbeinu Yonah, the place that you designate, that just depends on your amount. The more you use it, the better. That just has to do with your kavana.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to try to say one more story and a few halachot, and then one more story. If anybody wants to go, please. I gave the schedule, so anybody, don't feel I'm not insulted at all. You're patur. Thank you so much for coming. You can. You don't have to stay long. The halachot. Right, that I want to get to, we're just saying, what does it mean praying with the minyan? Ikar is praying Shmona Esrei together when everybody else is praying. And therefore, a person who comes into the shul late, so it's even a question if you should start Shmona Esrei before that they start. Sometimes if you came so late that they're about to start Chazara, you shouldn't start right then. You should wait till they start Chazara, start together with them, and then go together with them. Because praying Chazara together with the Sibur is considered more praying with the minyan than if you just pray when they're basically finished. You should always try to align yourself so that you finish your Shemoneh Esrei somewhere where they're finished so that you can hear the Kiddusha or by Arvit or Mariv to hear their Kaddish. That's the most important things I want to get to. Davening times I know I did not get to. Nates is one of them I'll get to. Nates is the most ideal Shachari time. You can even pray before that for work, and you can pray all the way after that until Sozman Tefillah, 4 hours after sunrise. While that's true, we said Nates, the sunrise is the most ideal, Vatikin, most ideal time. Though, if you have the question, davening by yourself or praying with a minyan, that's the difference between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. Sfardim would say, pray with a minyan, and Ashkenazim say, if you usually do Nates, you can do Nates. Here's the story. The Ben Ish Chai says about this parsha, why is it that Hashem wanted the Jewish people to come to the Yam Suf, and then Moshe says we're totally desperate, we're locked in on all sides of the Egyptians by the sea, they're going to kill us, and he's praying to Hashem. Hashem says, Mati Tzakelai, what are you davening to me right now? To the Bera B'nai Yisrael, so talk to the people and move already. What do you mean? Where are we supposed to go? The sea is shut. Says the Ben Ish Chai, gives a story from Moshe Jalanti. The Rishon LeZion in the 1600s of Yerushalayim, he's two generations after Yosef Karo. He was the rabbi in Yerushalayim, and there was a tremendous drought, and it caused a famine. And the Muslim Sultan of Jerusalem was under a lot of pressure. He didn't know what to do, and he was talking to some of his advisors, and his advisor said, you know who's causing the droughts? The Jews. They're in charge of everything. So the Sultan invited Rav Moshe Jalanti and said, I want you to pray that there's going to be rain, and I know that Hashem listens to your prayers. And if you don't pray and there's no rain in the next 3 days, and sometimes, especially in Jerusalem, especially in Israel, it's dry and there's very little rain. If there's no rain next 3 days, I'm kicking out all the Jews of Yerushalayim, no more Jews. And he told his community, everybody should start to pray. Rosh Jalanti was praying, and he said, on the third day we're going to fast. And they fasted, and he said, everybody should come to Mincha with raincoats, umbrellas, rain boots, rain gear, and they started come to the synagogue, and everybody's been fasting and praying, and the non-Jewish sultan saw this and said, "What are you doing with your rain boots on? There's not a cloud in the sky." So he said, "We have a munana Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem's going to send us the rain." So Rav Moshe Jalanti got up and said, "Everything is talui banu Hashem." Asked us to daven with prayer, and Hashem listens to our tefillot, and even the non-Jews know that, and we're going to go to pray by the Kaveri Siddiqim, and Hashem's going to answer our tefillot, I have no doubt. And as we were leaving the city, some of the non-Jewish officials were mocking them. They said, you know, you guys are leaving right now. You should just pack your bags and stay out for good. You're never coming back. They went to the gates where they had the Kibrei Tzedakim, they had the Rosh Shimon HaTzadik on Har HaZeitim. And they prayed by his kever. And as Rabbi Moshe Gilanti started the tefillot and said the second bracha of the Shemona Esrei, he was praying to Hashem. It wasn't one cloud, a thunderstorm came out like no other. It started pouring. And they paraded their way back to the to Yerushalayim, and they said, now the last, the tables have turned. We were prepared for this. We had our umbrellas already. So Rabbi Yishai said, really what Hashem wanted was not the tefillot, where our heart's not in it. We had to be under desperation for our heart to be in the tefillah. Matisake Eli, what are you, Hashem said to Moshe, what are you screaming at me? Saying words without so much meaning, Hashem wants our heart. The more desperate, the more we feel that we're connected to Hashem, that we need Him, the more Hashem's going to listen. But Moshe Gilanti, he waited to the last moment because he knew that would be a very meaningful prayer. Because then we would be Talui and Hashem. We need Him. And Hashem was listening to our tefillot of the Sibur that we've been trying to discuss, that the 10th person makes up the microcosm. And we discussed some of the chiyuv versus not chiyuv, the obligation versus not obligation, going for vacation, we had the different opinions, the idea of a Beit Knesset, the chashivut of that, trying to encapsulate a few halachot, some halachshava. Mirz Hashem, next time we'll get more halachot. Any questions on this or anything else? Chazak Baruch, any questions? Okay, so thank you so much. If any questions at any point, you can certainly ask.
Thank you.
Thank you, Yossi.
I have a question.
Sure, please.
Yossi has a question, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Rabbi Azos.
I'm wondering, according to those opinions that don't say that there's an actual requirement to send the minyan.
Yes.
So what do those opinions do with the the idea of being poresh min ha-tzibur? In other words, the provision of being poresh min ha-tzibur.
Very
so what are the parameters according to those opinions?
Excellent. So, to the furthest extreme, this is something we wouldn't want to find our worst enemies on, is what the Rambam says. Someone's Purish Min Sibur, they lose their share in the world to come. He says, what does that mean? The Rambam's definition, Purish Min Sibur to extreme, is the person who wants to disassociate himself with the Jewish community altogether. He doesn't fast on their fast days. He doesn't have anything to do with the Jewish people. He doesn't pray with them. He doesn't take part in their celebrations or their fasts or anything to do with the Jewish people. So that's something that for sure is an extreme. That someone doesn't want to have anything to do with Jewish people. That's a scary, but one extreme that we don't want to be parshim in Sibur, not to want to do with them socially. That's the Rambam's definition. They want to do with them anything. I think beyond that, even the opinions that I mentioned as not a full obligation, there's certainly not just icing on the cake by going to the minyan, but there's certainly something, a strong layer of kavana and spiritual connection that a person gets from coming to the minyan. As far as I know, people that are able to make that commitment to the minyan are able to join together and spiritually become inspired and become connected and to the best of their abilities. Purish Min HaTzibur, I think, beyond what I was saying before, the extreme, is somebody who says, as a mandate, I don't want to help out people. The Gemara says someone who doesn't join when there's 9 people and they need 10, and it's one of the halachot I had over there, that even it means losing out on a shiur to learn, so it means you're supposed to help out the community to make a minyan. So it's Purish Min HaTzibur, not to lose a shiur in Olam Haba, it's not that serious, but it's a mitzvah, it's called the Shachein Tov, to make the minyan, because it helps people to make a minyan. So if you ever get that text or something to help to make a minyan, that's what I would say. It's not Purish Min HaTzibur to the extreme, but it's Purish Min HaTzibur because it's part of what the Gemara says, Shachein Tov, a good neighbor, helps to join.
Thank you.
What kind of kiyum is it by attending a minyan and not being Purish Min HaTzibur?
Okay, so according to Ramosha, there's some apps, the absolute value in joining minyan that your Hashem's gonna. I never really got back to Hashem's going to listen to your tefillot. There's El Kabir Velo Yimas. Hashem is a powerful, strong God, and Hashem doesn't reject. Hashem doesn't hate our tefillot. So the Gemara that's talking about the tefillah of Sibur, Hashem, Hashem always listens to the Sibur. Mashal is, if you get a bag of apples in the store, if you buy one apple in the store and you look at it, it's a little bit soft or mushy or rotten, you go back to the store and you tell them, you give me a rotten apple. And if you buy a bag of 20 apples or 20 potatoes and one of the potatoes is bad, you can't go to the store and say, oh, one of the 20 potatoes are bad. Maybe you have an excellent store. But generally speaking, you're not going to go and say 20 potatoes, one of them is bad. You take a package. Same thing with our tefillot. As a whole, as a minyan, I have kavanah on this bracha, he's kavanah on that bracha. As a whole, Hashem is going to listen to tefillot. And Hashem's not going to reject any of them. So that's the value of minyan is that Hashem listens to your tefillot, and there are many sources to that. I didn't spend a lot of time on that, though. Does that answer?
If you pray at the same time in your own home as an individual, as the minyan, you also get the linkage, no?
Very good. So it's a machloket, like many things. The slach says it does count. There is one opinion. That counts as tefillah b'tzibur. You get that linkage 100%. The Magen Avraham, Mishabura, we assume it's not tefillah b'tzibur mamash. It doesn't count full, the real deal as joining the minyan, but it counts as something, absolutely. In terms of asha avrachamim, that's what it's called, it's considered a time of mercy, Hashem is going to listen, more likely that it is called. It's a shah of rachamim, it's a time of mercy, but not considered, you don't have any guarantee like you have a minyan. A minyan, we have a guarantee that Hashem is never going to reject the tefillah of a sibur, but you don't have the guarantee with praying at the same time. But you have something else. You have the shah of rachamim. That's the Aki Yosef's opinion. If, whatever, there's a lot more to discuss, but what about if you're in the same synagogue and you're praying a different tefillah? They're praying musaf, you're praying shacharit, all those. There's a lot of opinions on that. Some say it is, and some say it isn't. Some say it's a shah rachamim, and some say that's mamish tefillah b'tzibur. That's a machloka.
Is there any credit for a certain higher level of credit if you're, even though, say, you're praying, not you're doing your amidah in the Beit Knesset, you're not praying with them?
Yes, until yesterday, I thought there was no such thing. I thought, okay, it's nicer in a shul to add something. In fact, there's even a halakha brought from the Rosh, that says in the Shulchan Aruch, you're not supposed to pray before the minyan, because it looks like Parish Me'asibur. Everybody else is praying, and I pray faster than them, so I shouldn't start before them. That's brought in Shulchan Aruch. I'm not supposed to generally start before this Sibur. If you need to, you go in the hallway, you go nearby, you don't, it's not nice to pray. If you take 20 minutes in Shimon Esrei, you take forever, and they're very slow, so you're allowed to start before them, so you end at the same time as them. However, you start, so anyway, I saw yesterday, Rabbi Elazar Milamed has a book, has a sefer on Panini Halacha. He quotes, trying to remember now who, could have been the Adara, but he quotes someone who says, praying in the place where there is a minyan, praying. They're praying Pesukah de Zimra, they're praying something else, not Shemona Esrei. If I align when they say Shemona Esrei, for sure that's Tefillah Tzibur. But they're saying something else and I'm not. He says that's also considered a little bit like a Shah Rachamim. It's not Tefillah Tzibur, but the explanation for that is because Hashem comes, now, Hashem comes in many ways, but Hashem's presence comes whenever there's a gathering of 10 people trying to do a mitzvah. So there's a higher level, even though they're doing Tehillim, that also counts for something. And my Shemona Esrei, when they're saying Tehillim, it's definitely some Adriga. So yes, there is some. I don't know exactly where it falls, but it definitely counts for something.
Thank you.
Okay. Chazak Baruch.
Chazak Baruch. Looking forward to next week.
Thank you. Looking forward, yes.
Nice to see everyone.
Good to see you. Thank you for
joining.
Isaac, did you want to say Shabbat Shalom? Okay.
Bye-bye.
Shabbat Shalom, Isaac. Thank you for doing it. Thank you for arranging, Isaac. Hi there. I'm finished.